A Thanksgiving Day Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 27, 2003, entitled, Gratitude, Its Source and Its Fruit. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 58, verses 1 through 12, 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10, and 17 through 19, and Luke 12, verses 13 through 21. Copyright Grand Valley State University. Please note that the original recording spanned two sides of a cassette tape, so there was some missing material. I will bridge the gap.
Beautiful day, beautiful music, dance, beautiful people gathered. There's always something especially wonderful about this day and this service in particular. I suppose it's because we are never better than when we become cognizant, conscious, and aware of the gift of life, of the grace of life, when we recognize how richly we have been blessed. When gratitude fills our hearts, it seems as though all of those poisons that tend to invade our hearts are expunged, and there is a sense of well-being and of joy. I have never found a person filled with gratitude that was unhappy, bitter, or complaining. Gratitude is a marvelous grace, and I'm thankful that we have this day annually. Next year it'll be so much fun to introduce Ian and Meg Lawton and their children to the Festival of Thanksgiving, because those poor benighted Aussies and New Zealanders don't have this day, you see. And so he'll find he's got to preach one more time than he figured on. Thanksgiving is a wonderful day, and I would start out by almost apologizing this morning for being so elementary with you. So elementary as to suggest that gratitude's root or source is grace, and its fruit is contentment and generosity. The root or source of gratitude is the overwhelming sense of grace. Nancy always threatened to put on my tombstone, Richard Grace Rem. Now it'll have to be on a niche in the columbarium. But I think we can get those five letters on there. I would be happy to be known as Johnny One Note, and that one note being grace, because grace, finally, when it is overwhelmingly experienced, is that transforming experience of life. That is, that all is gift. St. Paul said one time, "What do you have that you have not received?" And that's true. What do we have that we have not received? That sounds, again, so elementary, but it is so profoundly true. I think we might sometimes mouth that without really believing it. There's a little voice inside says, "Yeah, but I worked hard. But I was responsible. But I made the best of the situation that was given to me." Well, the comeback to all of that is, who gave you that sense of responsibility? Where did you get that sense of discipline? Where did you receive the skills and the competence? It's true, we can squander our gifts, and many people have. But it is not true that any of us can claim to be self-made people. For all that we have received. Life is gift and life is grace. And if it would ever seep into the marrow of our bones, it is the most transforming awareness and realization which is possible for us. And it is that transforming awareness that changes us and makes it such that we can never be the same. It leads us to a deep sense of humility. It fills our lives with gratitude, which issues in contentment and generosity. To really believe in the depths of one's being that all is grace. Jan Jellema's father, Harry Jellema, was a great human being, a philosopher, taught at Indiana State and then Calvin College until he reached mandatory retirement, and then was invited to Grand Valley to found their philosophical department. And Harry Jellema used to come with his children once in a while to our services. He was, to me, the epitome of a wonderful human being. I went to his funeral, and his pastor related that the last time he called on Harry Jellema in the hospital, he was about to leave when Harry called him back, and he said to his pastor, "Alles is genade." In his native language, Dutch, "Alles is genade." All is grace. After a long, rich, and wise life, that simple summary. The Apostle Paul, in one of the more painful dimensions of his life, prayed to God for the removal of that thorn in the flesh, whatever it was, and had a vision of the Lord Jesus Christ, who in the vision communicated to Paul these words, "My grace is all you need." Grace is the source of gratitude. And if that ever really settles in deeply within us, we are different people. That is the transforming understanding of true humanity. And gratitude has its fruit. There are a number of things one could say here, but I lift up only a couple because I think they're relevant for our contemporary situation. One of them is contentment. The passage from Timothy, "If you have food and clothing, therewith be content." It's in that passage that we have those famous words, "The love of money is the root of all evil." Not money, but the love of money. And by that, I think the writer was suggesting that there can come upon us a kind of drivenness and compulsion, a desire to acquire, to amass, and to gain far beyond what our fundamental and basic needs are. I am glad to report that the news is that the economy is recovering. And the economy is important. And I don't want to be one of those all too spiritual, in quotation marks, preachers who denigrates wealth or the health of the economy, for it's important for us all. But I noted last evening on the eve of Thanksgiving that in the national evening news. We heard again what we will hear incessantly in these next weeks, and that is day by day, blow by blow account of how the retail sales are going.
I've noted how different it has become. Formerly, the media's role was to inform us and entertain us.
But now the media has been purchased by corporate America, and they entertain us and inform us briefly, sandwiched in between a barrage of commercials that cannot help but affect us and certainly shape our children, as though somehow or other a full human existence and a good life is constituted by the things that we possess. In total contradiction to what Jesus said, when one rather disconcerted and unhappy person came and said, "Would you help me in the distribution of the estate of my family, because I think I'm being taken advantage of?" And Jesus said to him, "That's not what I'm about." And the question triggered with Jesus a suggestion that in that very desire to possess and to amass, to acquire, there was betrayed a kind of discontent. And he used the example of the rich farmer whose crops were so abundant that he had to tear down his barns to build bigger barns, thinking that he could go into early retirement, eat, drink, and be merry. I mean, it sounds pretty good. And again, I don't want to disparage a good life and a prosperous life and a comfortable life. But I think the point of Jesus, the point of Jesus is that there can be gnawing within us. Thank you, Robert. It's good to have a water boy here. I think the point of Jesus, but it is only water. The point of Jesus is that we can, that contentment is not really a matter of how much we are able to amass, because there are people who are poor who are content, and there are people who are rich who are content. It's not a matter of whether one is wealthy or poor. It is a matter of the heart. And if one has ever been overwhelmed by grace so that one wakes up and says, "Another gift today," and one comes to one's dying hour and says, "Alles ist Gnade," such a person will have a kind of contentment which will make such a person almost indifferent to those outward circumstances of his or her life. There is a better way to live than to be either rich or poor. It is to be content, which is a fruit of the experience of grace, which is the source of gratitude. And then generosity. Grace issues in gratitude, which issues in generosity. And I think today of the possibility that we have to feed the hungry. And I think of that long list of wonderful causes for which we hope to be able to contribute $25,000. And I realize that if we have that deep sense of grace, and if we are filled with gratitude, That's precisely the kind of thing that we'll want to do that brings us joy. Again, how could I possibly denigrate wealth or the health of the economy when we ask you to give with such generosity, to subscribe a huge amount of the remaining 2003 budget? The point is not, again, that we should somehow or other disparage the goodness of God in the possessions and the wealth and the financial power that we have, but it's the set of the heart. It is the contentment that then, out of gratitude, delights in nothing more than doing good. And we all know that, don't we? Never are we, I think, more content and more satisfied and feeling better than we are able, when we are able tangibly to make a difference. Little statement in my Bible. I guess I could have brought it back myself, Bob. By a Catholic religious nun, Joan Chittister, whom you have perhaps heard of, but thinking of this matter of generosity, I almost wonder, as I thought about this, whether generosity is saying enough. Because generosity can be an action of one who has more than enough. And if one isn't really careful in the giving of gifts to those in need, it can be a kind of patronizing act. We have to be so very careful of that. That's the problem with charity. It's like if I have more than enough, I have the prerogative of bestowing on others some of my largesse, and it puts me in a position of superiority. And so I almost thought about changing that word generosity to the word justice, thinking about the Isaiah passage. Because our world today is so needy. And we have such abundance. I'm concerned about the fact that this nation of ours, of all the nations in the West, is the most religious in our observances, in our church going, in our confession of belief in God. But somehow, somewhere, there's a disconnect between our religious observance and our pious expressions and the world as it is. I'm more and more troubled by that. I'm more and more troubled at the end of my ministry. I'm more and more troubled about the irrelevancy of the church. I am more and more troubled about the disconnect between religious profession and world transformation. Joan Chittister said, "We live in a moment in human history that calls for the deepest wisdom and will require holy struggle on behalf of all creation to resist chaos. The map of the world is changing. People are starving to death on the television screens in our family rooms. People who have worked hard all their lives fear for their retirement, while we continue to invest more money in Neanderthal instruments of destruction, which in this new geopolitical world appear increasingly useless, than we do in human development. What is the spirituality we need for the 21st century? We face a choice. To retire from this fray into some marshmallow paradise where we can massage away the heat of the day, the questions of the time, the injustice of the age, and live like pious moles in the heart of a twisted world. That's a tremendous image. A tremendous image for irrelevant religion, isn't it? Pious moles in the heart of a twisted world. Or, she says, we can gather our strength, our spiritual strength, for the struggle it will take to wake up from this pious sleep. We live in a world of knowledge and technology aplenty, but one that is clearly lacking in wisdom and spirituality. We are taught to want money, to retire as early as possible, to get ahead whatever the cost to others, to worship at the altar of the self, and to be in control of everything and everyone at all times. But those values are a recipe for extinction, a blueprint for human destruction. One out of five preschool children in the United States is in poverty. In the richest nation in the world, 20 million are hungry, and 40 million have no health insurance. Joan Chittister has a prophetic voice. It's the kind of thing I would invite you to think about today. We could make a difference in the world. What if the united forces of the Christian church and the religion of Islam and the Jewish community and the other religions of the world, if they would join in? What a transformation we could make. I'm concerned about the way we've responded post 9/11. We didn't ask the question about why we experienced that horrible attack. And it's a very complex answer. But we never really asked the question why. Rather, we declared war on terrorism. And we have gone to war. And we are currently in a morass in Iraq. There was a general on TV within the last few days who said, there has not been one assault upon us that we have not been able to defeat, and we will prevail. And I want to scream and say, of course we can prevail. We could bomb them to oblivion, except we're too decent for that. But we're not wise enough to know that in our world today, in the geopolitical situation of the present, it is not military might and power that will make a difference. It just won't ever prevail. And the more we flex our muscle and use our military might, the more we aid those who are recruiting terrorists to become suicide bombers, to continue to keep the rest of the world in the grip of fear. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that. The problems in our world today are the problems that could be met by a religious devotion rooted in the experience of grace that brought about contentment and humility, and issued in a kind of generosity moved by justice that would deal with the cancers on the body politic. How would you like a world in which the Lord would guide you continually, satisfy your needs in parched places, make your bones strong, so that you'd be like a watered garden, like a spring of water, whose waters never fail. Then your ancient ruins would be rebuilt. You would raise up the foundations of many generations. You would be called a repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. Dear God, wouldn't it be a good world if around the globe there were streets in which people could live? That's really the issue. The transformation of the world will be the consequence of a transformation of people through grace, which issues in gratitude, which flows forth in contentment and generosity moved by justice. Otherwise, all of this is just pious claptrap that seeks a spiritual fix while the world stands on the threshold of disaster. Thanksgiving is such a wonderful day because it calls us to our senses. And in the counting of our blessings, the recognition that alles ist Gnade, we become transformed. And by God's grace, transforming. That would be a wonderful Thanksgiving.